Happy Friday. Good to have you. Lots to do today.
Yes.
There was lots of news yesterday, as a matter of fact. So the update on Minneapolis was the governor, Tim Walz, held a press conference. And he said that Minnesota is being shut out of the investigation. We talked a lot about now the investigation process yesterday. Mm-hmm. Who should be involved? Who should be in charge? Who should be leading this? Well, the FBI is leading the investigation. And Tim Walz's perspective is the investigators in Minnesota need to be involved. And whatever, you got to investigate this.
Yeah.
But his point is that the department, the administration, has basically adjudicated this, that this person was malicious, that they were taking particular aim at this one particular ICE agent in particular, mm-hmm. and that this was purposefully done. That doesn't set up a good investigation. It doesn't set up a good foundation for an investigation. And he says that Minnesota is being shut out of it.
Yep, those are the facts. And, you know, people are saying that there needs to be some sort of independent investigation here because, to your point, like an hour after this happened, the officials from the Trump administration made their minds up that it was her fault. And J.D. Vance went on at the mic yesterday and said it's her fault. Blatantly said it's her fault of her own making.
Yeah. And there are some politicians in Minneapolis who said, listen, you know, we trust the rank and file FBI agents who are doing the investigation. We don't trust the political part, which is Cash Patel and those people. We don't trust that, you know, he'll do the right thing. But they trust the agents, the rank and file agents, excuse me, but just not him.
Well, so J.D. Vance spoke yesterday at the podium in the press room. And he had some thoughts on the governor, Tim Walz.
Look, Tim Walz is a joke. His entire administration has been a joke. The idea that he's some sort of freedom fighter, he's not. He's a guy who has enabled fraud and maybe, in fact, has participated in fraud. That's what this new assistant attorney general position is going to find out. I don't care what Tim Walz says. I care about getting to the bottom of this fraud for the American people. And I care about enforcing the nation's immigration laws. That's what we're going to stay focused on.
He also announced that they're introducing the special investigator to look into the fraud in Minnesota. That was the reference there.
Yeah.
But that's out there. And the vice president of the United States spoke on this issue yesterday. So, I think I was flipping around the channels yesterday. And depending on which station you watch, you're going to get a completely different perspective.
Totally different. Same press conference, same thing, but totally different.
Not even on the press conference, just on the issue. I mean, you turn on Fox News and go, did you see the video? I mean, did you see it? It's pretty obvious. And then you flip over to MSNBC or whatever they're calling themselves now. Or CNN. They're going to go, did you see the video? It's pretty obvious. Like, it's very different perspectives. But I think it's because it's so borderline, it's what makes it so difficult to judge.
Yeah, I think that people are dealing in extremes and absolutes on social media. And this is exactly why social media is dangerous, because it's feeding into, you know, everyone being angry at each other and on opposite sides. And that's a problem, which is why it would be nice to have the perception of just an independent person coming
absolutely.
In and
yeah.
investigating
yeah.
it.
Protests popped up all over the country yesterday, obviously in Minnesota, mm-hmm. But in places like Philadelphia, New York, Nashville, places out west, there were protests here
in
Detroit.
Yeah.
So those protests continued. Meanwhile, in Portland yesterday, Portland, Oregon, two people were shot by Border Patrol agents. A man and a woman, they were wounded. They were hospitalized. There was a automotive stop. There was a searching. They say there was a Venezuelan claim that there was somebody in the country illegally, a member of Tren de Aragua. And DHS said that they pulled this car over and, quote, weaponized the vehicle and attempted to run over law enforcement agents in Portland. So that also broke yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, everything is just so heavy. And I'm looking forward to a lighter Friday, but we do have to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. We don't know who the identity of the two people who were shot. Local law enforcement don't know that yet. And we don't know much about this story.
I mean, how much more of this could possibly happen when these agents are in different places and people are protesting? And, you know, how much more is this can actually happen?
Well, Tim Walz said yesterday, like, don't, like, protest. Yeah. Make your voice heard. Mm-hmm. It's your right. But don't go over the line.
That's right.
Because that's what they, Donald Trump, that's what they want. They want a show, I think is what he said. Mm-hmm. There are people that are going to cross the line. There are people that are going to be agitators.
And some people are paid to do that.
Absolutely mm-hmm. they are.
Yeah.
So there is that piece of it too. But again, no problem. You want to protest, God bless, do your thing. But it's when it crosses the line that it becomes problematic.
And crossing the line is subjective. And the use of force after doing that is also
crossing the line as a protester. If you if you all of a sudden are violent or destructive, that mm-hmm. I mean that crosses.
That's
the line.
Obvious.
Yeah.
The U.S. House voted yesterday to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies that expired at the end of 2025. It's a move aimed at easing rising health insurance costs for millions of Americans. The measure passed 230 to 196. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries called the affordable crisis very real, saying lawmakers now have a chance to take a meaningful step forward after months of inaction. The vote follows last year's historic government shutdown, which ended without resolving the subsidy issue. Even as many Americans began facing higher premiums in January, the legislation signals growing bipartisan support for a proposed 3-year extension of the tax credits that help people buy insurance through the ACA marketplace. However, the Senate is not required to take up the bill, and alternative proposals, including a shorter 2-year extension, are also being discussed.
They needed 17 Republicans to join them, and they got it.
Yeah. They got it.
Yeah.
This is not going to be the deal that the Senate will. If they approve any deal on this, they're not going to approve that.
Yeah.
Senator Bernie Moreno of Ohio and Susan Collins of Maine have been working on a deal. Their deal looks like a 2-year extension of these enhanced tax credits, an extension of the open enrollment period until March 1st. It would impose new income eligibility cap for subsidies at 700% of the federal poverty level, a $5 per month premium, which comes out to about $60 a year, mm-hmm. $100,000 fine for insurance companies, quote, for deliberately causing fraud by signing someone up without their consent. In the second year of that deal, it would give individuals an option to choose a lower plan if they want, then the difference can go into HSA accounts.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So there's elements of
a little bit of
both.
Yeah.
What the Senate Republicans want to do mm-hmm. and extending these subsidies. So we'll see, but there is that deal that was passed in the House, I don't think is what's going to fly in the Senate.
Yeah.
Another thing that really has no shot of going anywhere, but it seems symbolic, is the Senate advancing this resolution to limit President Donald Trump's ability to conduct further attacks in Venezuela. It was Democrats and 5 Republicans who voted to advance this that would go to the final passage next week.
And he was hot over those Republicans crossing over.
Mm-hmm.
The president was. He was not very happy with that.
No, but this said it has to go to the House and pass, which it probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to, it may have a chance in the House, but then it's got to go to Donald Trump to sign, and I can't imagine he signs it.
I can't imagine he right. would sign that.
Yeah, but do they have if he vetoes it, do they have the votes to override?
No.
Probably not.
Yeah. No. So. No, they don't have a veto override vote.
No.
I don't think they have those numbers. Meanwhile, Daniel Roberts will join us, former head of the FBI here in Detroit. As the FBI continues this investigation into the Minneapolis shooting, what are they looking into, and what type of collaboration would they be looking from in other agencies? We'll talk to him next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. An immigration enforcement operation in Minneapolis now under intense scrutiny after federal agents with ICE shot and killed a woman during a raid. They say the shooting was justified, but city leaders are pushing back hard, calling for transparency and accountability. That puts the spotlight on the FBI and how it investigates incidents involving other federal agencies, especially when deadly force is used. And joining us now to help break down what the process looks like and what questions investigators will be asking is Daniel Roberts, retired assistant director of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division. Daniel, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good to be back with you.
So when an ICE agent is involved in a fatal shooting, what automatically triggers FBI involvement? And what does the FBI's role actually look like in the, let's say, first 24, 48 hours?
Right. So the FBI has some pretty wide-ranging jurisdiction on these cases. There's a couple of different ways that the FBI becomes involved. Number one, they have jurisdiction over what they call assault on a federal officer. And that could be virtually any employee of the federal government who becomes assaulted in any way, shape, or form, the FBI does have jurisdiction to investigate that. So that could be anybody from a federal prosecutor, say, to any law enforcement agency. If they're actually assaulted during the performance of their duties, the FBI has jurisdiction with that. Additionally, they also have jurisdiction, and I know there's been some discussion about whether this was a domestic terrorism, quote-unquote, case. And of course, the FBI has jurisdiction to run those investigations as well. That one, to me, is a little bit more questionable as to whether there is actually a domestic terrorism nexus to this case or not, but the investigation will bear that out.
So when you saw this, I mean, everyone's entrenched in their sides and people are outraged that the state should be involved. You weren't, because this seems like protocol.
It is protocol. And this is something that that the FBI does every day. You just likely don't hear about it because it doesn't have the national attention. A lot of times it involves, you know, an unnamed federal, you know, agency that's out doing their job, and they become taken under fire or they're assaulted in some way. The FBI would have in jurisdiction to investigate that case. A lot of times those are done with local authorities as well. And then they decide later on, should we pursue federal charges or should we take this locally? And it just depends on which has the better case.
Does the Bureau ever feel a sense of urgency in investigations like this? Because obviously people want answers here.
Sure. Absolutely. And this will be put on, you know, a priority for them as well. I'm sure they have mustered all kinds of resources from Quantico, Virginia, where their laboratory is, for example. I'm sure they have sent them to the scene there to conduct a lot of the evidence recovery and things like that. So, yes, there is those types of decisions done every day. In fact, in my later stages of my career with them as a manager, those are the types of decisions that you have to make on a daily basis. Where do I prioritize the case today? Where do we send more resources to get that going? Something like this, where it's got the public's attention, absolutely, there would be more resources sent to it to address everything right away.
Daniel, when you have video footage that's circulating online and officials saying what you see is what you get, how does the FBI actually treat civilian video? Do they treat it as evidence or as a context, or is it something that still needs some heavy scrutiny?
Sure. It's just another piece of evidence, along with all the other deep dive that they're going to be doing on this case. They will look at every piece of video that they can get, and they may even have some that that the public hasn't seen. You know, if they're looking at, you know, Ring doorbell cameras in the area, for example, or any businesses that may have video footage that we haven't seen yet. So, yeah, that is certainly part of the investigation, but that's only one small piece of it. They're going to be doing a deep dive on the motivations of this driver, the victim in this case, who ended up passing away. They're going to be looking at her background and finding out if she was radicalized, if she was part of a domestic terrorism organization. They'll be looking at that and doing social media reviews, interviewing witnesses, doing all kinds of evidence recovery. So it's just one piece of the entire investigation. It's not, you know, it's not the end all, the be all.
What about this idea that officials came out and sort of said several things about this victim very quickly? Is that something that could harm the investigation?
You know, it's possible that it could. I know we in law enforcement would prefer not to talk about the case in the media, especially while it's being investigated. It just doesn't help law enforcement really that much to do that. But those are political decisions that are made by politicians, and they're usually the ones you don't hear anybody in law enforcement talking about, you know, the background of the ICE officer that was involved or the background of the victim in this case. You know, those are likely political decisions, and frankly, most of the time they don't help the actual investigation at all.
You know, and Governor Waltz pointed to Minnesota's handling of the George Floyd case as proof that the state can conduct fair and high-profile investigations. From your perspective and your experience, Dan, what makes an investigation credible in the eyes of the public? Who leads it, and how transparent it is? Is that one of the criteria?
Well, at the end of the day, the FBI will do a very credible investigation. They always do. And the results of their investigation will be proven in the court filings and everything else, and people will be able to scrutinize it after it's over with. This one is a little bit unique in that oftentimes the FBI tries to partner with state and local law enforcement agencies to conduct investigations. And from what I see in the media is that the politically charged nature of this case has directed that the FBI just take it over by themselves and work it as a single agency type of investigation. Normally it's good to work together with state and local law enforcement because state and local law enforcement has some great resources that they can bring to bear. But in this case, there's such a politically charged environment that I guess the FBI decided to just take this one singly, and they certainly have the resources to be able to conduct this. In fact, I would argue that the FBI probably has more resources than any other law enforcement agency in the world to conduct this types of investigation.
Daniel Roberts, retired assistant director of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division. Always appreciate you coming on and giving us your insight. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's my pleasure. Have a good day.
You as well.
You know who didn't rush to judgment was Tom Holman on CBS News, the border czar. He said he would reserve judgment while an investigation is underway. And then he later came out with a statement that more mirrored everybody else. But initially, he had that reaction.
Yeah.
Which is the appropriate one.
That's the one.
In my opinion.
Absolutely.
This same officer has been identified, this ICE officer. He was the same officer who had his arm pinned in the back of a window in one of these other raids and was dragged for about 100 yards.
Okay.
In this car as somebody was trying to get away. He had multiple lesions, cuts, things like that. His arm required 33 stitches in this incident. This is the same officer that was involved in this. He's also a firearms training officer within the department. So this is somebody that has seen a lot in his time in the department.
The Friday edition of JR Morning continues after this.
What did you make of his press conference?
It was very Brad Holmes.
Yeah.
I mean, he is very measured in what he says, and he talks about, he at least said it was a failure.
Yes.
They're not in the playoffs, boom, failure, period.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that, because that's what everyone is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But he also says, like, we're not that far away. And, you know, I think that's arguable. Some people might say, like, well, I mean, the offensive line struggled. The defensive line outside of Aiden Hutchinson had struggles.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary had struggles.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you're not like one player away from greatness or a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, the thing that irked me about his press conference, and look, I think Brad Holmes has a lot of leeway, right? But you don't want this thing to get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that bothered me is he said, you know, whether it's in draft situations or free agent situations, people would be surprised by the avenues that we've gone down to acquire players. And that's not knowledge. That's not information that fans are privy to. But you'd be surprised. And I feel like that's exactly what somebody would say if they just had a failure of a season. like, well, you don't know what we're doing back here. We're working really hard. And I think they are. Okay, so I'm not saying that they're not. But I just think that's
what you hear, though, usually.
That's the bell that goes off in my mind.
No,
to go, okay, well, what does that mean? Because you could be more aggressive in a free agency. You know, you could become, you may have to overpay in free agency. Oftentimes you do. But do you feel like at the end of the day, like that's what's going to throw your team over the edge? And in the last couple seasons, not really, because they've been riddled with injuries.
Yeah.
Right. Secondary 2 years ago, offensive line.
Right.
Yep.
And he did talk about, like, they tried to get some offensive linemen, but, like, there isn't, like, TJ Maxx for offensive linemen. Like, there aren't that many available.
Well, you got to go to the good one, first of all.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Second of all, I I'm with you.
Which is at Square Lake and Telegraph.
just put it in, just put it there.
Put it into the universe.
But I would have to.
Anywho,
agree. I would have
I digress.
To
but, yeah. If, you got, if you're a team with a good offensive lineman, you're probably not trading them.
Right. Exactly.
So there generally aren't available.
Yeah.
In a midseason acquisition. So one of the things that has been talked about is there a problem with their strength and conditioning philosophy? Like, are guys put in a more strenuous position
because they hit in practice?
I don't know. I don't buy that.
Here's why I don't buy that it's a Lions problem. I mean, yeah, we've had injuries the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But look at all the injuries around the league. I think it's the number of games problem. You have
There's that too.
All these games these owners want, plus these preseason
and
games.
And you're putting
too many games. These are humans.
You're truncating a portion of their schedule too. I mean, if you're the Lions, you're playing on Sunday, then you're playing on Thanksgiving,
right.
then you're,
oh,
you know,
man.
Like
yeah.
they went, what, three games in 11 days at one point?
Something right. like that, yeah.
So it's like, it's too much. It's too much. And then because of all the broadcast rights and the TV schedules and things like that, mm-hmm. you're putting these guys who are already, you know, if you listen to any player, they'll tell you how awful it is after a game and how much just recovery is needed
yeah.
before you got to put the pads back on to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like you truncate that, and it does put more stress. It does make things. There's a difference there.
The commentators that were commentating on TV of the Lions and Chicago Bears game, they brought that up. They said, you know, the Lions, you know, have a lot of injured players, but they're such an aggressive team, and they play so hard, and that's why they probably lose their players like they do. Well, I mean, all these teams are playing hard. It's not the Lions, just not the only aggressive team. There are other teams that are playing hard too. They're losing people and some don't, but it just yeah. depends.
Micah Parsons is out. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs didn't make the playoffs, their head guy
right.
out. So there's that. And just one more thing on these Lions. I was there at the practice facility in mid-July and saw Mike McDaniel in his cutoff pants,
his capris,
capri pants, his buffs, his look.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could play well here. As an offensive coordinator.
So he is the now fired coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are reports the Lions reach out to Mike McDaniel.
Yeah. So he's a good offensive mind. They had a wonderful run game in Miami this year. For the entertainment factor alone, would love to see Mike McDaniel in Detroit.
Just yeah. have him stand directly next to Dan Campbell and
the size difference.
Yeah.
It's like twins with yeah. Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn a little more about Mike McDaniel, you could just go on YouTube and watch a press conference. This dude is like, you ask him a question, you're like, hey, why'd you call that fourth down play? And he's like, I thought about it. And I decided that was the play. You're like, what? Blink twice if you're there. Are you conscious? He's a strange cat.
He's interesting.
Did they mention anything about Montgomery? Because there's been talk about.
Yeah, they did. He talked. There was a question on whether or not he'll be back with the team next year.
Well, he's not. He didn't say what yes or no. Right?
No.
I think probably no.
I think probably no as well.
Yeah.
I think probably no as well. And he did say something to the effect of, you know, we'd love for him to be here, but we love
He said
him
he deserves
and,
to be in a situation yeah. where his skill set can be utilized.
Right. So if it's not here, we hope he's happy somewhere.
Somewhere else, yeah.
Which is not
yeah, right.
a ringing endorsement.
No.
But they never were able to get a deal done with Alex Anzalone. So, like, that's another guy that you know, you of this era.
Mm-hmm.
Who played a big role might not be on this team next. They have a lot of tough decisions to make.
They need to, yeah. The
a team, lot of tough decisions.
Team needs an enema.
Well, the trenches. The trenches need an enema.
Yeah. Not a full overhaul.
Right.
That's what Brad also said. We don't need a full overhaul here. We need pieces.
I mean, I agree with that. I don't think they need a full overhaul. I mean, they have a lot of really good pieces in place and a lot of really good, you know, important positions.
Yeah.
But you still, I mean, for it's been years where they've needed like a defensive end opposite Ian Hutchinson.
Yeah, and when you have Jared Goff as your quarterback, you need a solid offensive line.
Absolutely.
This is just the way he plays. This is not a knock on him.
No,
you need a solid offensive line, so go get one.
He's not
very mobile.
I think he's good.
I think he's a great quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
He's a top five quarterback in the league.
Absolutely.
But
100%.
He is not a scrambler.
No.
He doesn't... He's not going to wow anybody with his 40 time.
No.
So they have a lot of interesting decisions to make here this offseason. Meanwhile, do you have any trips planned this year? Any interest in like going somewhere new maybe?
Yeah, always. Yes.
Checking something else out?
Oh, a new tree, a new stoplight.
We're going to talk to Adrian. Well, yeah, we're going to talk to AAA coming
Lloyd
up next about
something. Yeah, no,
that's
plan.
It. No. Lloyd needs a cigar and a bourbon is what Lloyd needs. That's yeah, any vacation
and
for
and we're
Lloyd.
Good.
All right, we're talking about it next on JR Morning.
So it's 2026, and you might be thinking, I got to get out of here. I need a little trip, whether that be warm, whether that be ski related. I don't know. I've been thinking about it, though.
Have you? Uh-huh.
Need a little break.
Need a little break.
But, you know, what are the cool new spots to go to? Let's ask Adrian Woodland, Public Relations Program Consultant at AAA. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
So, you know, let's talk about 2026 travel. Where should we be going?
Yeah, so winter travel is definitely in. Coolcations are the new thing. We're seeing strong winter travel, especially for things like skiing, snowshoeing, and cozy weekend getaways. And of course, we have plenty of places to go here in the state of Michigan.
And you know, and talk about what are some destinations that might surprise folks? Because when people hear cool places to travel, they often think about expensive or it being far away. There are some great trips that don't require a passport or a huge budget.
Yeah, you know, Michigan is one of those places. Michigan actually ranks second in the nation for the most ski areas, with more than 40 ski destinations across the upper and the lower peninsula. Popular ski spots like Boyne Mountain Resort and Crystal Mountain offer both family-friendly slopes and winter activities. And beyond skiing, Michigan hosts several winter festivals throughout January and February, like the Alpena Ice Festival and the Michigan Ice Festival Immunity.
You know, one of the places that I have not been in Michigan that it's on my list is Leland and like Fishtown. I have not been there.
People love it.
I know. And it looks like such a cool, unique place. I haven't been. So that's on my list of a place to visit too.
Yeah, there's so many great places to visit throughout the state, even, you know, during this time of year.
So what's like a good spot nationally that people go, like maybe even underrated a bit? Everybody wants to go to, you know, Phoenix or Florida or, you know, places like that.
California.
But like, is there like an underrated place, an up and coming place that people should check out?
Yeah. So, you know, Michiganders love to head to warmer weather states for a winter getaway. And of course, you know, Florida's Gulf Coast is really popular. Places like Clearwater, Sarasota, and Naples are popular choices. But for those that want even bigger, you know, snow adventures and mountains, Colorado ski towns like Breckenridge and Vail are popular picks for more elevated winter sports experience.
You know, social media has changed how people travel as well. Are there destinations that kind of, you know, look great online but don't always live up to the hype, and others that kind of quietly over-deliver?
That's one of the reasons it's really important, you know, when you're planning your trips, that you work with a trusted travel agent, because they can actually help really curate trips that fit with what you're looking for within your budget. And then they can kind of go through the pitfalls of the unknown and kind of get you to places that you'll really enjoy, and it'll be a really comfortable experience.
All right. How about internationally? Where are we going?
So there's all kinds of international trends. What we're seeing now is we're seeing a surge in travelers exploring their family heritage. And Italy is definitely leading the way for one of those places. Folks are going to smaller towns and remote villages. They're becoming hotspots as families seek to reconnect with their roots. You can also expect interest in Italy to grow even more following the Winter Olympics next month, which typically boosts global travel curiosity. Getaways to Mexico are always popular. And then river cruising is year-round in Europe now. And European river cruising offers a relaxed and immersive way to explore multiple destinations without the stress of frequent travel days. And, of course, ocean cruising stays popular. And, again, there's the growing interest in river cruises.
All right. I'm excited to go somewhere. Adrian Woodland, thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Here's an overrated place. You ready?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went to Nashville for my cousin's wedding last year.
Oh, I remember
You're
that.
A hater about Nashville.
The Cowboys and the hats.
Look, it ain't my place. All right.
Oh, man.
Look, here's the other part. Look. I feel like an old soul sometimes. I'm 37, okay? I am not old guy.
Okay.
But after the wedding, you know, we went, you got like an after party.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So my cousins were like, hey, come, we're going to Jelly Roll's bar.
Okay.
All right. So my wife and I go.
Okay.
And we're there. And I'm looking around, and my cousins who are, you know, 10 years younger than me, right, getting married, and they're with all their friends, and I'm like, I look to my wife, and I have to scream in her ear because it's so loud. I'm like, we have to go. Like, this is not for us. We are too old. We have kids.
Have a little fun,
we gotta get out of here. And I was like, boy, this is rough. This, I should not be feeling this way, but I do. I felt that way. So Nashville for me is I'm good on Nashville.
I went there for my bachelorette, and it was everything I had hoped.
You and every other woman getting married. I saw 500 bachelorette parties there. Oh, and yeah. By the way, they all look exactly the same.
I resent that. I was very unique.
I believe you were. No, I believe that. But whether they were bachelor parties or bachelorette parties, it was the same. White tank top, jean shorts, cowboy hat, cowboy boots.
Boots, yeah.
For the men, white, like, undershirt.
Okay.
Jeans, cowboy boots, cowboy hat. And I'm like, oh, there's a bachelor party. There's a bachelorette party. There's what? And all the same.
Okay. I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's very commercialized, and it's like,
it's like Vegas. Yeah. It's like, yeah. It's
now it is.
The
it
Vegas
really is.
Of the. Yeah. Of...
But that doesn't mean it's not fun, yeah. You old man.
I'm telling you. Here's the other thing. Oh, my God. The other thing that we like to do is when we travel, we like to buy Christmas ornaments. So we put them up on our tree, and we're like, oh, remember this?
Remember
oh, we did this.
Yeah, okay.
It was fun. We're, like, walking on, what is that?
Broadway.
And then we're like, oh, maybe we should stop in here to see if they have any Christmas. I'm like, we are over the hill. I don't know what's happening to us.
Dude.
We are just. So don't go to Nashville. Or do. Whatever. Do your thing.
Oh my goodness!
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Any place that you've gone that you just hated, didn't like, didn't
well,
live up to expectations?
Negative.
I'm not negative. Just no. It, you know, it happens.
No, I don't have a place I just did not like at all. When she mentioned Vail, I mean, I love a ski vacation.
Yeah,
I love it.
We're going to introduce the kids to skiing this year.
Good.
Excellent. Yeah.
You got to go ski school.
Ski school. Yes.
Ski school because you know parents trying to do it is too. It's too much.
No, I can't do that. I'm not. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Oh, you don't
want
to be the one that, you know, if they mess up.
No,
you don't want that on your conscience.
No. I got to have plausible deniability. I got to go, it wasn't my fault. It was their fault.
Oh, okay.
No, I wouldn't do that. It's a no for me, dog. Yeah, no. No, I can't be responsible for that. Really, they don't even listen to me anyway. So what am I going to teach them? They're not going to listen. I'm going to be like, do the pizza. And they're going to go, like, no.
So if they don't listen to the instructor, then it's on them, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay.
But they do. Like, you drop them off, and then when you pick them up, they're going on the lift by themselves. It's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, lots of news coming out of Capitol Hill.
Well, the tensions seem to be ramping up in places across the country as the investigation into the shooting of Renee Good continues in Minneapolis. That comes from ICE officers on the scene just a couple of days ago. And we saw protests break out in places like New York, places like Detroit yesterday. Obviously in Minneapolis and others, other places around the country. Two Border Patrol agents or a Border Patrol agent shot two people in Portland yesterday where protests were already underway. So the tensions for those that are protesting what the administration is doing with ICE agents across the country, that's just, really ramping.
Elevating, yeah.
Escalating for sure, and it just seems familiar in Minneapolis, doesn't it? And you hope that it doesn't explode into something huge and terrible. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance was at the podium yesterday talking about a number of things, but one of which is the shooting in Minneapolis.
What's going on here? You guys are meant to report the truth. How have you let yourself become agents of propaganda of a radical fringe that's making it harder for us to enforce our laws? You just asked me a question that presumed that the reason why this woman died is because she was engaged in legitimate protest. She tried to run somebody over with her car, and the guy defended himself when that happened.
You know, I would say that he's presuming some things, too. Why can't we just wait till this whole investigation
is done? Yeah.
Is done. I do think that it's gotten pretty ugly on social media and people just living in absolutes. Like, she did nothing wrong. She absolutely didn't deserve this, to this officer did everything wrong or nothing wrong, both sides. And this is what social media does, divides.
Yeah, it's what they do. And quite frankly, you turn on the TV. You turn on some of these networks, and they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, whatever silo you're in, they're going to take that side, and that's how it is.
And the reaction to it, like the Tom Holman's reaction, the border czar said, I'm going to wait till this investigation plays out. I really feel like the reaction to this sort of hypes it up even further.
But that, to me, always provides, like, Tom Holman's approach to that is how it should be. So when Tom Holman has an opinion on something, to me, there's more gravitas there. There's more credibility, because when the stuff's hitting the fan, he's going, well, hold on. Let's wait. Mm-hmm. Let's see how this plays out.
A little different from Kristi Noem.
Well, different from Kristi Noem, different from the president.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
It is.
And you could support your federal officer in your statement. You could be like, we believe, you know, he's done the right thing, but let's wait and see what happens here. Like, that's a completely different reaction, and I think it lowers the temperature.
Look, these folks are being put in some hard situations, right? They're being put in difficult situations, not only to apprehend people, but then they're put in difficult positions when it comes to the public.
Yeah, because they got targets on them.
Of course, really. They do.
And everywhere they go.
We've seen that.
Yeah.
So we know that they have a very high-stress, pressure-filled job to do.
And so they are following the orders of the people who gave them the order.
Right, yes. And that's always been my contention with the folks that are angry at ICE. Angry at ICE. Oh, we're angry at ICE. Why? They're enforcing immigration law, which is this administration's purview. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing.
I assume those people would be like, then you should quit your job and not enforce what.
What you
know.
Should do
but
is
that's, you know.
Contact your representative on Capitol Hill and have the conversation. Vote. Do whatever you want to do. This is not the way to do it. Doxing federal agents or dragging them around with cars or ramming into them with cars or sniping from a distance away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is not the way to do it.
Agreed.
That's not the way to do it.
But we also don't know what happened this situation.
Of course.
So I would wait and reserve judgment on this person.
General Motors is reporting another major financial hit tied to its electric vehicle strategy. The automaker disclosing a $6 billion loss yesterday from unprofitable EV investments, filing the charge with the Securities and Exchange Commission as an impairment, meaning the assets are no longer expected to generate the returns once projected. Now, GM says changes in federal tax and regulatory policy helped slow EV demand in 2025, including the elimination of the $7,500 federal tax credit and a rollback of emissions rules. In response, the company reduced EV production, shifting its Orion Township plant from electric vehicles to gas-powered SUVs and pickup trucks, where it says demand remains strong. Now, GM also scaled back battery operations, selling its stake in Ultium Cells' Lansing facility to LG Energy Solution. About $4.2 billion of the charge is cash, largely tied to canceled contracts and supplier settlements. The move follows a $1.6 billion EV impairment reported last fall as automakers across the industry rethink their electric vehicle plans.
It's always been the problem when you go hard in the paint like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's things are going to change. And look, the realities are, how many people are going to buy EVs? It's not as much as they thought.
No.
And so you get a change in administration, a change in ideology, and all of a sudden you're left holding the bag going, well, what am I supposed to do with all of this?
Yeah, change my plants around. I got plants doing all this stuff, and now it's not like that.
You've got companies like BYD right out of China that has overtaken Tesla as the world's leading EV seller.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, what does that mean?
It means that there's a demand for it around the world,
right?
But maybe not here.
Yes, that's the problem.
That's the issue.
It is not in high demand here.
No.
And so, when GM, I was critical of their process when they said we're going all EV by 2035. It's like, well, wait a second. A lot could change by then.
Absolutely.
But you are putting so much resource, so much money into basically reworking how you do business.
Yes.
if it doesn't work out, you're going to be in some trouble.
I mean, the infrastructure wasn't even sufficient.
No,
for
still
all
isn't.
You were doing.
Still isn't.
You know, right.
No, still isn't.
How it about, isn't, but I mean, let's talk about Brad Holmes. Is the infrastructure there for the Lions?
Yeah, sure.
We gotta go, but we could do one little bite here. He says there's just a few pieces, not a whole big change.
Again, we'll be looking at everything, but I do not think that this is a deep surgery overhaul. Like, you know, I don't think that. But obviously, there needs to be some adjustments made for sure.
Okay,
I'll take that.
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll see. That's right. We'll see what the adjustments are. Meanwhile, speaking of the Lions, we're going to talk to a former Lion. Eddie Murray joins us next to talk about a special event coming up at Ford Field. But first, 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. As we head into 2026, we've got news from the small business community that bodes well for those who are putting in the hours and the effort to make those small businesses go. And that is, as reported in the Wall Street Journal, more small firms issued raises to their employees in December. And as the journal puts it, it looks like there's more where that came from, as employers indicate that they're maintaining their plans to increase employee compensation in the future. Now, the National Federation of Independent Business Bureau chief economist Bill Dunkelberg reports that in December, a seasonally adjusted net 31% of small businesses reports raising compensation. That's up 5 points from November, and a seasonally adjusted net 24% plan to raise compensation in the next 3 months even further, and that's unchanged from November. Moreover, the latest report from the NFIB also finds that U.S. small companies continue to report more job openings. In December, 33% of small business owners reported job openings they could not fill in the current period. That's unchanged from November. One data point from the report that is less positive is that business hiring cooled a bit last month, as just a net 17% of business owners plan to create new jobs in the next 3 months, and that's down 2 points from November. So, all in all, while a mixed bag, encouraging news here is that when a meaningful population of small business owners issue raises to their employees, there inherently must be some sort of positive view on their behalf underpinning that extra spend that those businesses are making. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. We're talking about a wonderful event coming up on January 30th that highlights autism resources and expanded mental health services in our area. And someone who knows a lot about this is Eddie Murray, retired Lion. You all know his stats. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Jamie.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. So we're talking about the HOPE Network. First, tell us about the HOPE Network and what it does.
HOPE Network just had its 60th year anniversary last year. They're the largest nonprofit in Michigan. We're about $150 million, 3,000 employees, and we service about 40,000 Michiganders with behavioral health services. So been around quite a while. I've been fortunate to be with them for 15 years as their director of donor relations for Southeast Michigan. And as you had mentioned earlier, we're having an event January 30th at Ford Field called Spirits of Hope, kind of strolling food station, wine tasting, bourbon tasting stations, and funds from the event are going to our behavioral health services in the Tri-County area.
Eddie, you know, you played in an era where mental health wasn't openly discussed, especially in professional sports. How different does it feel today to see mental health front and center in conversations like this?
Well, I think it's very important because it's kind of been in the shadows for a long time, and it's coming forefront now. And people, our tagline is, you know, we're all equally human. Mental health has always been kind of been pushed into the shadows and not really talked about. And for it to be kind of forefront like it has been and getting the attention that it needs to help the people that are in our communities try to live a you'd want to call normal life, but they try to live a life better than the situations that they were in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing everything that we can to try to help people in our community have a great life.
Eddie, what do you find the biggest need for here in the Metro Detroit area is?
Well, it's advocacy, first of all. I mean, because there's so many different aspects that are out there with people with mental and physical disabilities. We also serve a population of refugees in our workforce development. Their barrier is language. So in our workforce development that we have up in Grand Rapids, we actually translate 14 different languages, and we also help those people get their English up so they could be in a situation that they can get better jobs in situations that they can speak English, and then also returning citizens. You know, we help them when they come out of incarceration, get their first job and resume build, and get them used to being up in the community and working again. So there's a lot of different silos of things that are out there that, it's good to see that they're becoming more mainstream and acceptable.
Let's talk about your event, Spirits of Hope, inside Ford Field on January 30th. What can people expect?
Well, that they get the experience, for people that, don't go to a lot of sporting events, but, Ford Field is a great venue to have events like this, whether it's a corporate event or it's a nonprofit raising money. They have the experience of going down and actually walking on the field that the Lions play on, and getting to tour some of the unique crevices of entertainment that they have at Ford Field, and a lot of auction items that we have. We have a lot of experiences with hunting trips and pheasant trips here in Michigan, and golf trips, a lot of play and stay type of things, as well as we're auctioning off certain wine and liquor tastings and stuff like that, as well as just the sports memorabilia that they have out there, the people that are interested. And it's a fun event, a lot of music and dancing and stuff like that. So a lot of things to experience.
You know, the suggested attire I see is graffiti glam, which is bold and expressive. How does creativity and self-expression kind of play a role in breaking stigma around mental health?
Well, it does. I mean, it's something that, it's the biggest thing really is embracing this community that's out there with disabilities, and accepting whatever challenges that they have, try to make their life better, and then also enjoy the fact that they're having fun at events like this. We usually have some of our consumers that are at the event also enjoying it, so people get to see them and meet them and enjoy what they're bringing to the event. So I think it's very important.
Cam Little kicked a 68-yarder this year. Are you going to try to match it at the event?
Oh, I might have to lay up at that distance.
Are you surprised by how far these field
They're
goals?
Juicing these balls. It's crazy.
Oh, well, first of all, Little's really made a big impact this year, starting with the 70-yarder in preseason.
Yeah.
So that kind of put him on the map right away. But, these kids now are just really – they're coming in with so much strength and accuracy. That's really the key also. There were guys in my day that could kick that far, but a lot of us didn't have the accuracy like they have nowadays. I mean, these guys now are, if you're not 80-85%, it's not like you're not a good kicker. It's really impressive to see these young guys now.
Well, this is a very worthy cause, January 30th at Ford Field. How do people reach out if they want to come?
They can go to our website, hopenetwork.org, /spiritsofhope, and they can get all of the information for tickets. If there's anybody out there, we have some really unique sponsorship levels. So if there's some people that would like to get some recognition and marketing recognition at the event, there's a lot of options for them to choose.
Eddie Murray, former Detroit Lions kicker, current director of donor relations for the Hope Network Foundation. Thank you for your time this morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and thank you for having me.
See you, Eddie. I was playing golf with Eddie one time, and I didn't know this, but he played a lot of cricket growing up. Do you know that?
I did not know that.
Played a lot of cricket, and I'm like, can you explain cricket
in
to me?
In Halifax, Nova Scotia?
Yeah, and well, he lived in England for some time, which I didn't realize. But he was like, he was trying to explain the game of cricket, and I'm like, Eddie, you could be talking, you could speak in Mandarin. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, he's great. And, you know, I did a cute story. His daughter's a cheerleader for the Lions. And so, like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Currently, then, now?
Yeah. Oh. And so then he and his wife go to support her at Detroit Lions games.
Nice.
When, like, the family would support him back in the day.
Sure.
So it's a really cute familial thing.
Speaking of, did you college football last night? Miami beats Ole Miss. Miami, the team that people didn't think were going to
Miami was this good.
Make the playoffs. They're good. I was surprised that they made the playoffs, but now they're going to play for a national title.
I saw them play and beat Pitt.
Yeah.
And Pitt was, like, supposed to be pretty good at that time. I'm like, Miami's not that good. Wrong.
Wrong. Playing for a national title. Unbelievable.
Exactly. All right. Stick with us on JR Morning. Lots to discuss when it comes to what's going on in Minneapolis. Plus, we'll keep it light as we move through our show today. We also have that bakery in Rochester doing some amazing things. Stick with us.
So the investigation in Minneapolis continues. Interesting video from CNN that they obtained. A new angle on Renee Good when she in the immediate precursor to her being shot by the ICE agent. Jamie, what does this video look like? CNN played this last night on Anderson Cooper's show.
All the videos that we've been seeing have been from the perspective of the person with their own phone and screaming and seeing it from that one side of the street.
I've seen two angles. The one from the widely circulated one, and then there's another one from down the street, and that's the video that it shows. It looks like the ICE officer kind of bounced off the vehicle. But again, you only see that for a fraction of a second because there are trees there. So you don't get a great look. Those are the videos that I'd seen prior to this one.
This would be a video from the other side of the street. It looks like a Ring doorbell or something from a house a building that's a little higher than the street. And it's the opposite side. And what this purports to be is Renee Good pulling up 4 minutes before this altercation, pulling into a spot on the same side of her street. And someone gets out of the car and walks somewhere. We don't know who that person is or what she's doing. It looks like a drop-off, but what do we know? And then she pulls out into the street. What looks like, have you ever done a U-ey? You make a parking spot, you do what you need to do, and you turn around to go the other way. That's what it looks like from this video. And then a white truck pulls up behind her and stops, the one that where this guy gets out and starts, like, filming and walking to the front of her car. And then other ICE agents pull up. The whole thing is 4 minutes.
Her pulling up, though, and then pulling perpendicular in the street, it happened pretty quickly, yes?
I mean, drops the person off, the human being gets out, starts walking, and then she starts to turn as if she's leaving. That's what this video looks like.
Yeah, it looks a little different to me. My judgment on it is she pulled into a place for somebody to get out of the car in the middle of this police operation. And then once the person gets out of the car, she pulls perpendicular in the road. And as Anderson Cooper mentioned in his reporting yesterday, that there was enough room for cars on both sides of the street to pass by. So she was kind of in the middle. And then that's when there was a convergence on her vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, again, without having any context, we don't know what any of this means. It's just new video that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
I question why somebody would pull into a police operation and then pull perpendicular. If you are going to drop somebody off, I would never pull into the middle of a police operation for somebody to get out and then do a U-ey. I would probably pull either to, you know, stop short of it or go
past it.
Have them get out and then just continue on. I wouldn't pull, like, because I think, I don't know what the laws are in Minnesota, but I don't think that's a legal street maneuver. And so you just pull out and go ahead. So something doesn't seem right. But again, we have no context. I have no idea.
We have no context. And from this angle, from the houses blocking down the street, you don't even see any police activity. You see an open spot and a car pulling in, dropping someone off and starting to make a U-turn. And then everything happens from there. What you don't see is snow everywhere and people stuck in any way.
Stuck in a snow because
you don't see that.
Yeah, because that was supposed to have happened.
It would refute the information that was initially given by DHS.
Right. So take with it what you will, but that just looks like an innocuous situation where someone's dropping someone off.
They also said that this was somebody who was chasing them around all day.
Yeah,
they
had been doing. Yeah.
And that video isn't going to answer any of those questions.
No, zero.
No.
But again, this it just proves that there is an investigation ongoing and we don't have all of the information. We can sit here and speculate and debate and wonder and are curious as to what happened, but we don't know. We don't know. And quite frankly, our leaders don't know yet either. Now, you can get reports from ICE agents. I'm sure there's body cam video to some extent. Sure. I'm sure they know more than we do. But it's hard to sit here and go and pass judgment one way or the other when we just don't have the totality of the facts. What we did learn yesterday was the identity of this ICE officer. And this is somebody who's been with ICE for 10 years. He is a part of the department that is boots on the ground. He is involved in these raids. He's not somebody sitting at a desk, right?
Right.
He is somebody who is out on the streets apprehending people, things like that. He's been doing it for 10 years. He's a 10-year vet of ICE. And he also was somebody who in Bloomington last year got his arm stuck in somebody's vehicle, and they drove off and dragged him 100 yards. He needed 33 stitches. He had lacerations and cuts and bruises and all kinds of stuff. And this is somebody who was involved in an event like that. So when you mentioned yesterday, Lloyd, does this play into their psyche? Does this play into, okay, well, what are we doing? What happens? What has happened? What has happened to other ICE agents
Flashback,
around the country?
I'm not going through that again.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I mean, he obviously was involved in an altercation which got him, you know, seriously hurt just last year. So I don't know how that plays into then, you know, using deadly force.
Yeah.
But maybe it does play a role.
Maybe it does. This 10-year veteran was dragged. They're, the Homeland Security is not saying his name, but the media folks have come up with his name. So I don't know if you'd want to say it or not, but...
I don't personally, I mean, I don't care. I don't think it's appropriate.
It's not pertinent to what we're talking about.
No. And I, on social media yesterday, people were, you know, there was a story I read that people were creating his face using AI.
Are you kidding?
Why? He was masked, but people were using AI because he was known before.
Are you kidding me?
So, I mean, again, this goes to... You've got members of law enforcement that are out there, in this case, federal law enforcement officials that are enforcing immigration policy, and people are online going, we know who you are, we know where you live,
oh my goodness,
you're going to get justice. I'm not about that life.
No, not at all.
So I think it's ridiculous. I think that you let, I watched a video, you're going to get justice either in the courts or street justice. I think it's absolute lunacy.
Nope.
And I think it only adds fuel to the fire.
It does. That's right.
Well, all of social media, this is what it does. When there's some division, which we have right now, it just makes it way worse.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch one video. So we watch this one video of a different angle. Mm-hmm. Then the algorithm gives you all kinds of content.
Sure. Sure. And then we're in a world, again, you're in the world of AI. So people are busy. They're not diligent. Right? It's why you listen to us, because we do all that legwork for you.
Yes, we do.
You're busy. People are going to go on social media and go like, oh, look, there's the guy. Totally fake image.
right? Exactly.
It create a vacuum of misinformation, and it can be really bad. It can be really bad for people.
I read a story of kids in Ireland or Denmark or somewhere where they're being taught in elementary school to try and spot fakes on social media. So you know from the beginning how to look for what's real and what's not.
That's great now. I mean, it's only going to get better. I mean, it's crazy now how good it is. Sometimes you can tell, right? Sometimes you can
sometimes
see it.
They have like six
sometimes.
Fingers.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
whatever,
you can tell.
But
yeah.
It's pretty real.
But
these
sometimes
days.
It's pretty realistic, and it's only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
6:44, time for Automotive Views with Mike Martinez, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
There's a new race in the automotive industry over who will be first to allow their customers to take their eyes off the road while driving. Tesla, General Motors, and Rivian are among those working toward that goal. And now, so is Ford. The automaker announced plans at the CES show in Las Vegas to deploy eyes off driving on vehicles in 2028, starting with a small electric pickup that's expected to cost about $30,000. That's notable and completely opposite of what crosstown rival GM plans, which is to deploy its own eyes-off tech on a six-figure Cadillac Escalade. Automakers typically deploy new technology on luxury brands because of the costs usually associated with new software and hardware. Ford thinks it can keep those costs low by developing the entire system in-house. It's another big bet from a company that hasn't always achieved its grand plans. And with 2028 not that far off, Ford has little time to waste to make those goals reality. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.
Well, I got to tell you, I had such a wonderful time in Italy on my trip with Conservative Tours. We are going to Germany in May, and I'm looking forward to this trip for a couple of reasons. I'm a bit of a history buff. I love history. And what this trip will afford is it's a history lesson, and you get old world Europe all in one. And yes, we're going to see beautiful architecture. We're going to have great food. But then you get the history side of things, the rise of the Nazi Party, and we get the sobering look at places like Dachau and some of the areas where a lot of big decisions were made by the Nazis. So you get two different perspectives on such a beautiful country. And Ken Chase, who heads up Conservative Tours, joins me this morning. Ken, it's great to have you back, my friend.
All right. It's great to be with you, Chris. Just a little technical difficulty there.
Of course. It wouldn't be a Friday without a piece of technical difficulty. Let's talk about this trip, because I can't wait to see this part of the world. It's always been on my bucket list. Germany is such a beautifully stunning place, just geographically, but historically it has so much significance as well.
Historically, as you were saying, it's this very much is a two for one, if you will, this tour, this itinerary. But I drew it up several years ago in consultation with my German colleagues. Of course, the key to all this is what we're doing, but also the lovely Miss Lillian. I'll talk about her in a moment. But the itinerary is, in fact, just as you've explained and alluded to, it's designed to be the beautiful, the charming, the elegant, the stunning views of southern Germany. And we choose southern Germany, of course, because it's the most beautiful region of all of Germany. We'd love to cover everything, as we would in any tour, but
right,
you have to be reasonable and do a little triage, and that's what we do here. So we're focusing on the best part of Germany, the most beautiful city, which is Munich, large by their standards, not particularly large by our standards, but Munich, of course, is a magnificent city. There are many other small cities, Nuremberg being one of them. Nuremberg is known for being, of course, a key focal point because it's where the rally grounds were built by the Nazis in the 30s to host these massive rallies. But of course, Nuremberg is actually one of the most charming small cities in all of Europe. And we'll get the guided tour into Nuremberg itself. And so this is typical of what we do. So it is, as we say, a mélange. It is a mix of what we call military battlefield, for good reason. We market around the country, as you know, Chris, to conservatives. And these are folks who like to read, and they like to read history. And therefore, many Americans have a keen interest in World War II history. So we're going to cover that, but we're also going to focus on the beautiful aspects as well. And when you're standing on this little pedestrian bridge over a chasm cut into the mountain, or not cut into the mountain, but naturally cut into the mountain centuries ago, and you're looking back at Neuschwanstein Castle. That's the fairy tale castle that Walt Disney, of which he stole the image. So when you see that little logo of Disney World, that castle, that's taken from magnificent Neuschwanstein. And if you've never been to Europe on the rivers and looked up at these castles perched on the side of a cliff, that's exactly what Neuschwanstein is. The view is stunning, and then we're going to get the private guided tour inside.
And those guided tours are so valuable. I can't tell you how much I learned, my wife learned, when we did Southern Italy. I mean, just the dearth of information that these guides have is unbelievable. You as well. I mean, a fantastic historian yourself. But the guides that take us around are add as much to the story, add as much to the landscape as anything else.
Oh, that's right. And it brings us back to Miss Lillian. Lillian, as I like to say, is, of course, she's German. She has a very, very unique background. She actually grew up, of all places, not just in Germany, but in Costa Rica. She speaks fluent Spanish. It's her native tongue, along with her native tongue of German. Fascinating background in diplomacy, her family. That in and of itself is an interesting little sidebar that we'll learn about during the 11 days over there. But Miss Lillian is fantastic. I like to say she's a little grandmotherly, but you don't want to get on Miss Lillian's bad side, because she leads the tour. She's German. She cracks the whip, and she is wonderful. She is attentive. She's gentle. But yes, she keeps us well organized, on time. And that's the way it's going to be, and you'll love every minute of it.
ConservativeTours.com has all of the information. If people want to book this trip, and I think that they're going to want to book this trip, the time that we had with our listeners in Italy was fantastic. And this is going to be a carbon copy of it. Great people, great food in a beautiful part of the world. How do people learn more, and how can people sign up?
They can go to the website, conservativetours.com, or they can call our toll-free number, 888-733-9494, and we'll do our level best. I'll do my best to answer as many calls as I can on the Germany event. But don't forget, it's also Germany and a little bit of beautiful Austria and magical Prague. Prague is everything we've heard it is, and if you've never been, you're going to love our visit guided tour to Prague. And then we fly home from the Czech Republic.
All right, you might even catch me in some lederhosen, if that's a selling point. I'm not entirely sure it is, but...
that's questionable.
Exactly. Ken, thank you so much. Appreciate everything that you do, and I can't wait to share this trip with you and our listeners.
You bet. Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Yep, that is Ken Chase of Conservative Tours. A fantastic trip. And if you want to learn more, conservativetours.com, and the whole itinerary is there. Everything is there spelled out for you. It's a great price. If you were to plan this trip by yourself, you'd be paying a whole heck of a lot more. So make sure you head on over to Conservative Tours and check it out.
I'm out of here, guys.
You're out of here. You are going downtown.
I'm going to MC the investiture ceremony. They're going to publicly swear in the mayor and city council and the police commission.
Okay.
And I'll be down there doing that this morning. And it's open to the public, but you have to have a ticket. Tickets are sold out now. So
tickets are sold out.
You can watch it on City of Detroit Instagram, Facebook, X.
Oh, that's why you look so nice today.
Yeah. It was like a little extra today.
Yeah.
Gone, sir! All right. Lloyd, have a good weekend. We'll see you next week. We'll take a break. 8 o'clock hour coming up. All right, welcome back. 8 o'clock hour. Good to have you on this Friday. Boy, it was nice yesterday.
We took a walk. It
was
hot.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I was like, do I need to get my shorts out? What is this? Steve Courtney always has shorts on. He will join us. And he gets to sleep in a little bit because Tom Izzo joins us at 8:35 this morning. So that'll be nice. But, yeah, very nice yesterday. I think it's supposed to be warm again today.
I believe so.
Right? A little more gloomy today.
Showers, though. I believe.
Yes.
Mostly cloudy, but...
nicer temperatures.
Yes.
So that's good.
Good for the heating bill.
That's exactly right. You can give your...
We got that heating bill. We're like, whoa.
It's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
It's a no for me, dog. So the investigation continues in Minneapolis. And we're getting more information. I mean, it's starting to trickle out. Once you start identifying people, you start to learn more about who they are, what they were about, and meanwhile the FBI is investigating the actual incident. Tim Walz yesterday held a press conference, said that Minnesota is being shut out of this investigation, although these were federal agents, and so it's a federal matter, so the FBI is investigating.
And we talked to Daniel Roberts from the FBI, retired from the FBI, and he said that's not unusual, that when federal agents are involved, that's sort of what happens. It wouldn't be a state
investigation. They will look at every piece of video that they can get, and they may even have some that the public hasn't seen, you know, if they're looking at, you know, Ring doorbell cameras in the area, for example, or any businesses that may have video footage that we haven't seen yet. So, yeah, that is certainly part of the investigation, but that's only one small piece of it. They're going to be doing a deep dive on the motivations of this driver, the victim in this case, who ended up passing away. They're going to be looking at her background and finding out if she was radicalized, if she was part of a domestic terrorism organization. They'll be looking at that and doing social media reviews, interviewing witnesses, doing all kinds of evidence recovery.
That's the investigation process.
Yes. And J.D. Vance took to the mic yesterday and talked further about everything going on in Minnesota.
Particularly about the fraud also. That was a main topic of his conversations. But here he is on Tim Walz.
Look, Tim Walz is a joke. His entire administration has been a joke. The idea that he's some sort of freedom fighter, he's not. He's a guy who has enabled fraud and maybe, in fact, has participated in fraud. That's what this new assistant attorney general position is going to find out. I don't care what Tim Walz says. I care about getting to the bottom of this fraud for the American people, and I care about enforcing the nation's immigration laws. That's what we're going to stay focused on.
He also criticized the media and the media's coverage of this
case. Oh, he sure did. He seemed very hot yesterday.
What's going on here? You guys are meant to report the truth. How have you let yourself become agents of propaganda of a radical fringe that's making it harder for us to enforce our laws? You just asked me a question that presumed that the reason why this woman died is because she was engaged in legitimate protest. She tried to run somebody over with her car, and the guy defended himself when that happened.
He read like some headline from CNN and was upset about the way they were portraying it. Which, again, we just and that can be a fair critique because we don't know what happened yet. But
well, we know someone died.
Of course, is that
the appropriate reaction and finality to sort of what we saw on the street there?
Well, but again, if we're claiming to be journalistic outlets like CNN is claiming, then when you say things that without clarity or without factual evidence yet. I understand why the administration takes that
approach.
Well,
I believe the headline he read was outrage over ICE shooting of woman or ICE, something like that. That's the headline that he read. What's inaccurate about that?
Well, there are people that are outraged.
Right.
That's true. But again, I don't know that everybody's outraged. I don't know
There is outrage because people are on the street. So I don't think it's an accurate headline.
Yeah. I think that when you start... When, you know, one of the things that he said yesterday is that Renee Good was part of a left-wing network. Again, they might be privy to information that we don't know yet. And there was a group of left-wing radicals that were working tirelessly using domestic terror and techniques to impede the agenda of this administration and the work that these federal officials are doing.
There are certainly people that do that and dox these agents, and there's videos out there that's just so cringe that these people are trying to follow orders, and it's not their order, it's them following the order. So I get that. But like coming to the podium and immediately sort of saying that she's part of this network, I don't see, you know, that they've put evidence out there of that yet. Why say that now? Wait for the investigation to go forward, like Tom Holman said.
So there's a story in the New York Post that said Renee Good moved to the city last year. She linked up with anti-ICE activists through her six-year-old son's charter school, which says that they put social justice first and prioritize involving kids in political and social activism.
According to whom?
Local sources is who the New York Post sources.
Okay.
There were people saying that I know she was doing the right thing. I watched the video plenty of times, but I know in my heart that who the woman that she was doing everything right. So, again.
Well, there's no absolute here. You can't say she was doing everything right and that agent, you know, is completely blameless doing everything right. There's some truth in the middle here.
Absolutely.
And that's what social media does. These people living in absolutes.
Absolutely.
I do feel sorry that someone is dead. And I saw a video of her car door open and a little stuffy of a unicorn sticking out. Like, mm-hmm. She was a mom and she is no longer with her. One of her kids is orphaned now. That's all sad. And I just, there's got to be some empathy for someone who's dead.
There are absolutely, I think there should be empathy. I think you're right. I think there is empathy. I mean, I think
but
there are.
But did you hear empathy from the podium yesterday?
Well, but that's one guy. And yes, he's the vice president. And yes, there should be more empathy. I'm with you. But I think there are plenty of people that can look at this and go, like, for me, I'm very skeptical of what happened here. Something doesn't add up to me. Something isn't, it's not passing the smell test. I'm very sad somebody died. This is crazy. I'm very sad that whatever led up to this led up to a federal official shooting somebody.
Right. And can the reaction be, I support, you know, federal agents. I support the worst of the worst being deported. And also something went wrong here. And there shouldn't be this ending to whatever happened on the street.
I don't know any level-headed person that doesn't think that. But there have been Democrats that have said,
there are people on social media that are just the worst.
Of course. Yeah. And that's not going anywhere, by the way. Unfortunately, those people, they get the loudest amplification. I just think that most people agree that if there are dangerous people here in the United States illegally that have committed serious crimes, that they should not be here.
Sure.
That has been the purview of not only the Trump administration, it was the purview of the Obama administration. It was the purview of the Clinton administration, the Bush administration. I mean, it goes back. So this isn't something that is revolutionary. But to then take the anger out on these folks that are carrying out the law,
again,
is wrong.
Taking it out on the wrong people, the people that give the orders, that's where you should put your ire. But what's different is like the regular folks, the kids
right.
in the high schools that are being deported. Some people think that goes too far.
And then there were protests that spiked all around the country yesterday, here in Detroit, New York, Philadelphia, Nashville, all out west. I mean, they were popping up all over the place. So there is outrage, certainly. And people are protesting to have their voice heard. And that's all well and good as long as it stays under the parameters of peaceful protesting. I think that's great. Meanwhile, you've got the lawmakers on the Hill passing a couple pieces of legislation yesterday. The House passed a 3-year extension of the Obamacare subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the plan that the senators are going to adopt.
It should die in the Senate. And then the Senate passed a War Powers Act mm-hmm. to prevent President Trump from doing anything further in Venezuela. That's not going anywhere either.
No. No, I imagine that even if it were to get past the House, he will decline to sign that piece of legislation. Meanwhile, the cakes that this bakery in Rochester are making are unbelievable. Unbelievable. And they've got a new one out. It is Lions-themed yet again. We'll talk about it on the other side here on JR Morning.
Okay, so it would be way more fun if the Lions were playing this weekend. That we know. But, you know, this doesn't diminish the work that went into 400 hours of work that this home bakery whipped up, another Detroit Lions-inspired masterpiece. And it's 100% worth it to go to Rochester and see this thing.
400 hours.
Yes.
Is unbelievable to me.
And they say that this cake is designed to celebrate Detroit pride and the power of community coming together. That doesn't get old and doesn't stop during the playoffs. Let's bring in Heather Tocco, owner of the home bakery in Rochester. Hey, Heather.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. I remember your Amon-Ra St. Brown upside down life size cake that really created a buzz.
Yes, yes. That was, who could have thought that would have turned into what it did? Just an amazing experience for myself, my team, the community. It was pretty epic.
It was epic. So then you decided to one up yourselves?
Well, you know, we always like to push our boundaries and go bigger, go better, bigger, better, more. You know, that's kind of our motto within the walls of the bakery.
One of the shows that we like to watch with the kids is a show on Netflix called Is It Cake? Where people try to replicate real items and then they put like the real thing next to the cake and these panel of celebrity judges have to figure out which one's a cake and which one's real. Kids absolutely love it. I feel like you would be excellent at this show because the players, you have Jahmyr Gibbs, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, it is almost indistinguishable based on the helmet sheen and the uniforms. I mean, you've got the gloves and their hair. It's unbelievable how realistic it
looks. Let's say what you made here. You made two players this time, and what are they doing?
So exciting. So we have them in the Spider-Man, Superman, Sally, and we actually wanted to go a little further, and we actually have St. Brown's fist bursting through the window. So it's actually the whole design is outside of the window, and it's very exciting.
It's really cool. If people want to go see it, it's Main Street there in Rochester.
Yeah, we're right downtown Rochester, right on Main Street, the corner of 3rd and Main.
Have you had any famous people or crowds coming to see this thing?
Nobody super famous, but we've definitely had some crowds out there, and people are coming in their Lions gear, and everybody's so excited. And it seems like, you know, I don't want to say we single-handedly changed the conversation, but it's no more like, oh, we didn't get into the playoffs. It's rallying around and looking forward to this next season.
Heather, would you consider doing a Detroit Tiger player, possibly Tarek Skubal? You know, maybe just show him how much we want him
sweeten
to stay
the deal
around,
a little
you
bit.
Know what I mean?
We have been getting asked that a lot, along with the Pistons as well, and we're going to consider it. We loved it all Detroit sports, but we got some pretty diehard football and NFL fans within the walls of the bakery, so it kind of pushes us in that direction. But we're watching the other teams as well.
I got to know, how much butter did you use in this thing? How much flour? What's the ingredient list here for something like this?
I should calculate that, how much butter is actually in it.
A lot.
A lot. 65 pounds of fondant. We have 4 sheet cakes in it, and that's structurally, you can only put the cake in certain places. We have 8 cases of Rice Krispies cereal treats in there, and the buttercream we actually didn't measure out. We probably should have, because there's a ton of it, quite literally.
Wow. Well, the black fondant elements are expected to fade due to exposure to natural sunlight. So if you want to see this, go to 300 South Main Street in downtown Rochester. See these things. You can't believe it's cake. It looks like 2 NFL players celebrating.
Our producer wants to know if you'll make one for him for his birthday.
We might be able to.
Yeah, make me a Chris Renwick cake.
Yeah, right. Yeah, nobody wants that. That would devalue the business. It's unbelievable stuff.
Heather Tocco, thank you so much for your time and for this. It's fun. You're right. You changed the conversation.
Thank you, guys.
Very cool.
Meanwhile, I'm going to take it back to what's going on with the team, because Brad Holmes spoke yesterday. And he talked about a lot of things. Is this a full-scale change? He says, no, that's not needed.
Again, we'll be looking at everything, but I do not think that this is a deep surgery overhaul. I don't think that. But obviously, there needs to be some adjustments made for sure.
Especially on that offensive line. They got to figure it out. I don't know if they expected the Frank Ragnow retirement, but here we are. And Brad Holmes admitted they need to add some pieces.
You'd be surprised about the moves that we tried to do that we could not get done that involved offensive linemen, whether that be draft or free agency. But no, it hadn't been ignored. We tried to do the best we can. I was excited about the youth injection that we did go with. I think it was necessary. But I believe I mentioned after we acquired those players that, you know, there's going to have to be some patience. There's going to be some things that those young guys hadn't seen before. I do think that those young players will get better. But just the offensive line as a whole, whether it's the interiors or the tackle, that's something that's going to continuously, we're going to have to be urgent in terms of adding to.
Urgent. There's urgent. Some urgency.
There should be.
And they got to add an offensive coordinator. They're looking into someone.
They're looking at Mike McDaniel.
I love it.
I tend to love it too. I tend to love it because I think it could be, supremely entertaining to see Mike McDaniel here. And all you got to do, look, we're not going to play any audio, but if you want to see what Mike McDaniel's all about, just go on YouTube and look up one of his press conferences. He is a strange cat.
He dresses interestingly.
Yeah.
I think he's an interesting character. It would bring a little levity and some fun over there. It also would bring an outside voice. Like, they've been hiring within a lot. Everyone that's been in that building a long time, they obviously valued some continuity and stuff for Jared Goff. But why not bring in an extra voice here?
Well, I think they think that too. I think it's important. But, you know, Brett Holmes also talked about how this season was a failure.
For our standards, this was a bottom line is, for our standards, this was a disappointment. All right. When we set out for this journey, for this season, it wasn't to match last year's record or exceed last year's record. It doesn't really matter what the record is. Bottom line is, if we're not in the dance and we're not competing for a championship, it's a failure.
That's the first thing to admit when there's a problem. And they've admitted that.
And yeah, and it's hard to not think of like the backslide of, you're 30 minutes away from going to the Super Bowl to 15-2, and you were disappointed in game one, to not making the playoffs at all.
Yeah, it's a slide.
Yeah.
It's a pretty significant slide. But, you know, my criticism of Brad Holmes is the needs that we went into the year with, the needs that we ended the season with, have been glaring for two seasons now. And they haven't been corrected. And they haven't been, you know, either aggressive enough in free agency or aggressive enough in the draft. But the glaring needs that they finished the season with have been there for years.
Well, and he said this yesterday. He liked the young people that he brought in. He thought the young people on that offensive line and that Frank would stay.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say that explicitly, but I think he thought that.
Yes.
Like, I think they were surprised by this retirement. And so now they know what they're working with. They know what they have. What happens with Taylor Decker, we ran sound from him that he's, you know, his body is not what it used to be, and maybe he doesn't come back. What happens with Graham Glasgow, they will figure out that offensive line, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to stop the bleeding here, and they've slid in the wrong direction. And so now, once you realize that what the problems are, where to fix them, then you got to be hyper-aggressive and go out and get the guys that you need. But, yeah, something's got to change.
Coming up, Tom Izzo should be in a good mood. They beat Northwestern, and there were some monster dunks from Colin Carr. We'll talk to him at 8:35.
All right, welcome back. That song means Tom Izzo will join us here momentarily. But a big win over Northwestern. They get the win over USC earlier in the week, and that was Tom Izzo's 750th win.
All the guys were like patting him on the back. Like, they'd do anything for him.
It's spectacular.
Quite a culture.
It is quite a culture. Steve Courtney joins us this morning to talk all thing MSU hoops. Steven, good morning.
Hey, good morning, group. Happy New Year. Pleasure to be with you again. Tom Izzo and the Spartans have been busy. Their win over the Wildcats of Northwestern, their third game in six nights, 76-66. The final, a night Carson Cooper, you guys, will remember for a while, a career-high 18 points. As a matter of fact, Coop, 6-6 from the floor, 6-8 from the charity stripe. He gets 9 boards, and he also added a block. Jackson Kohler, the other big, finished with 15 points, 8 rebounds. And how about Jeremy Fears? He was scoreless in the first half. He got a couple of fouls inside the first 5 minutes of the tilt, so he sat for a bit. All of his 15 points coming in the second half. Somewhat of a disjointed first half. I'm sure Tom Izzo will agree if he's able to join us here this morning.
He is able. He's willing and ready.
Well, this just works out swimmingly. Coach, Happy New Year, sir.
I don't miss this like you did last week.
Monday. He
Tell
took
him.
The day off.
Tell
How
him,
dare
Coach.
You.
Oh, now we're pointing out attendance records. Is that where we're at right now?
Well, I know one thing. If we did, you would be low on the list from high school to college and then now, your job. So attendance has not been one of your strong suits.
Well, it has been an unfortunate trend. We'll leave it at that. I'm sure, sir, an interesting halftime conversation. I alluded to the fact that we turned it over 8 times in the first 20 minutes, down by 7 to a pretty gritty Northwestern club. I know you got nothing but respect for Chris Collins and his program. Talk about that halftime chat.
Well, first of all, you know, they've beaten us four of the last eight times. I mean, it seems like every school, whether it's football or basketball, you have that one school or that one team or that one program, and give them credit. I mean, they played hard. But, you know, I sat there on the bench and I said, you know, there's two things about coaching. If you repeat the same thing over and over, to me that looks undisciplined. You know, we've been turning the ball over lately, and that's my fault. And then the second thing is we work so hard on our free throw shooting, and we've been very inconsistent on that. So I guess I got to do my job. Maybe I've been sleeping in like Steve.
I have a question about Jackson Kohler for you, Coach. Did you ever see him developing into a 53% three-point shooter? He's reliable from deep when he didn't make any threes in freshman and sophomore year combined.
Well, I'm sure his family and everyone else is blaming me for not letting him shoot it. But you know what? He got better every day, every year. You know, he's one of the hardest working guys, maybe the hardest working guy on my team. I mean, he very seldom does he come to practice, and it's not a good practice. And I can say this, guys, he's earned what he's gotten. I mean, it's been, and it's not coaching, it's individual. I mean, he kind of self-made himself by the extra work he does. You know, you give somebody, you know, a way to do something, but that person has to do it, and he's done it.
He's just very consistent, too. Like, you know what you're going to get out of him every game, it seems like.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, teams are starting to guard him different. We're not getting him as much shot, partially because we're turning the damn ball over too much, and partially because teams are doing a good job, like we try to do. You know, you hope the best player doesn't beat you. Now, last night, the Martinez kid, Martinelli, I mean, was so good. He had 28 points. Nobody's had 28 against us, and that means he did a great job, and we didn't do as good a job, but I tell you, to get a win, we had three games in 6 days. We had some travel in there late night, and I got all the excuses, but I kind of blame myself after the game because we're out of school, which means we're spending more time on basketball, which you do. I felt my team was a little worn out, and so I had to in fact, right now as I'm talking to you, I'm the only one in here. I kicked everybody out of here today. I gave them a Steve day where they don't have to go to work.
That's the kind of guy you are. Let's talk about Cohen Carr for a hot second here. Finishes with 8 points, but I got to tell you, that windmill slam, 9:15 left, puts us up by five, Coach. It was absolutely wicked. Are you to the point now where everything you see this athlete do is just kind of expected?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, he's not shooting the ball very well right now. And he'd been shooting the ball really well in the end of the summer. And I think some of it is in his head. But he's worked on it tremendously consistent. And what I have liked about Cohen is he's starting to figure out that I got to do other things. If I can rebound the ball, if I can defend the ball and keep running. He right now is working as hard as anybody I got on the court. His leadership last night in the huddles and at halftime was phenomenal. So, you know, we get that shot down, we're going to have ourselves a hell of a player. And, yeah, I'm really proud of Cohen. I'm not surprised by those dunks. I see him every day. Every once in a while, even I go, woo, you know. Last night was one of those.
Once again, a category that you put a lot of emphasis on for all the right reasons, Coach. The boards, 42-25 advantage last night. That included 11 on the offensive side, 16 second half, second chance points. That's pretty huge.
Yeah, you know, rebounding's been a big part of ours, and we've really consistently been a 10 or plus, which is amazing. We'll be ranked high in the country. So I'm proud of that. That shows some effort and some toughness. I wish that, you know, we could do it with our turnovers right now. And so that's got to be corrected. And that looks undisciplined. So that really bothers me. But we'll get better at it. We'll keep working at it.
Were we remiss?
Well, you get a little chance to breathe. You mentioned 3 games in 6 nights. Not back in action, Coach, until, I don't know if you know this, Tuesday night back at the Breslin Center hosting those Hoosiers of Indiana. Going to be an interesting tilt. IU right now 12-3 overall, 3-1 in conference play. Beat Maryland on the road 84-66 on Wednesday night. Now they've got a showdown at number 10, Nebraska, 12 noon tomorrow. All this under their first-year head coach, Darian DeVries. That will be an interesting tilt for sure.
Yeah, they're playing really well, to be honest with you. They really are. They create a problem because they play small ball. They've got a hell of a 6'6". His son is their foreman, so it's going to be some matchup problems for us, and we're going to have to deal with that. But thank God we got a couple days to try to figure that out. It seems like it's been working against us. Now we got a little time in between.
Indiana's a football school, though.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I tell you what, go Hoosiers tonight. I'm pulling for the Hoosiers, even though they're both Big Ten schools. I got to go to the one that's been there 100 years, and I'm afraid if I didn't, Bobby Knight would be looking down. It might be thunder and lightning here. So I'm pulling for our Hoosiers that have been in the league forever.
Coach, congratulations on win number 750, 751. I know that is an unbelievable feat, and we're so happy for you.
Way to go.
Well, guys, I appreciate you. You guys have a great weekend, and thanks a lot for everything you do for me.
Do the same.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks, Coach.
That, Tom Izzo, and that, Stephen Arthur Courtney. Thank you, Stephen.
Group, have a wonderful day.
You do the same. Have a good weekend. All right, we'll take a break. Still more to do here on JR Morning, what's going on around town. And we got another sweet deal for you. We'll talk about it next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. And we're talking about a WJR sweet deal where you spend $25, but you get $50. And you can't beat it. And today we have Fully Promoted out of Plymouth, Michigan, in-house with Tom and Gina Castle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about your company. What is Fully Promoted?
We do branded apparel and promotional products. We're located downtown Plymouth. We get to do all your swag.
Who doesn't love swag? And you brought us swag, this thing you designed with the city of Detroit and a cool sweatshirt.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
What goes into the design process on if somebody comes to you with their logo, their image, they need... I'm on your website. You've got pens and uniforms and apparel and shirts. You've got everything. So what goes into that process?
There's a lot behind the scenes, actually. So anything that's, like, for the pens, anything that's embroidered, we usually partner with people locally, and we'll part some of that stuff out. We'll get it back to the customer. I know that Gina does all of our heat press in-house. So we have partners all over the country that we partner with to make this an expedited process for the customer.
Are companies coming to you? Individuals coming to you?
Our model is a business-to-business, B2B. So, yes, companies come to us. But, I mean, my wife will do small orders, too, for people if it's in the community.
It's fun. It's fun. So I'll never turn down a job.
Okay, good to know. So just talk about some of the products you make and how you have little cool trinkets to larger items.
We can do anything. Golf outings, we can do top to bottom. Like Tom said, pens, mugs, a lot of apparel, shoes, cornhole boards. Tom, what are some other?
Well, one of the advantages we have is being a franchise. We have like 2,600 partners that we deal with, right? So we can, the old saying is, if you can think of it, we can embroider it, or we can put your logo on it, anything, to include toaster ovens.
So toaster ovens.
Absolutely. There's nothing out there that really we can't put your brand on it. And it's so important today that you know, companies are, they have ambassadors in their company out there, and they're representing that company. And we want you to look good. Our job is make you look good. We've got we've got high-end brands. We've got, you know, some of your middle brands. We've got everything you can think of under the sun in our shop. And if we don't have it there, we can order it for you.
Yeah, and I think that's what these companies are looking for. Right. When they're trying to brand themselves, they're looking for all kinds of items that they could put their logos on. And that's where you guys come into play.
What's like the hottest item, though?
Yeah.
Like back in the day, maybe you made CDs. That's obsolete now. So like, what's the hot thing now?
So a lot of people like your iPhone charging stand still. That's still a popular item because you go to trade shows, you go to job fairs, like people come through it. You know, your stand, they want that stuff.
Sure.
Those are hugely popular. And be honest, pens. Pens are always going to be popular
because
somebody wants
pen.
Their pen with their brand on it, their logo, because there's so many different styles of pens that you can get that are on the market. So it's kind of a way to show off what you're doing with your logo.
And I think apparel is a big one because you're wearing it and you're advertising all day long.
So tell us what the sweet deal is, because for listeners that are interested in this, you know, this is a great deal for them.
So for $25, you can get a $50 gift card for anything in our store. I mean, we have hats, like I said, cornhole boards, mugs. Come in, see what we have. It's a great deal.
And I think the goal is to get you in our store, because then once you get in, you'll see what we can do for you. And not only that, you get to hang out with us. We're pretty cool. Tommy and Gina.
Pretty cool.
You know,
I've heard Tommy and Gina before.
Living on a prayer. You've heard that from somebody once, right?
Yeah.
So we're cool. We come have a cup of coffee with us or a drink, and just let's hang out and look at our store. And we give an opportunity to a customer to actually come in and touch and feel products. A lot of times you just buy stuff online. You don't really know what you're getting.
Sure.
And you don't know what the really price is at the end of the day, because when you put it in your cart and you think it's one price, by the time you add up the shipping, We can beat those prices. We'll come into our store. We'll just walk you through the process. It's pretty easy.
It's a great point. We talk about all the time. Yes, there's convenience in going online, but when you can go in and actually feel something, you feel the quality, you see what the work that's being done, you know, you meet the people that are doing this, it really does make a difference.
Yep, I agree.
Well, WJR.com, click on Sweet Deals. You will see it there from fully promoted out of Plymouth, Michigan. These two seem like nice people. Go support them.
Starts in five minutes, so make sure you get over there.
Absolutely.
Thank you
so much.
Really appreciate you.
And if you want to hang on, we've got ideas of things you can do this weekend with Jer Stays.
Jer Stays is with us to talk about all the wonderful things that we've got going on in our area this weekend. What's up, Jer?
Good morning. How are y'all?
We're well.
Excellent.
All right. So we've all been around for a little while. How many of you have done karaoke before?
Oh, yes.
100% of the
people
in this room. All right, here's the thing. Have you ever done it with puppets?
No.
Okay, so tonight at Batch Brewing in Corktown from 8 to 11 p.m., it's puppet karaoke, and it's exactly what it sounds like. You pick the song, there's wild handmade puppets, and you can do the performing for you. So, like, if you maybe you're a little shyer or you want to do something different or you want to be absurd, you're going to have something you're going to be able to talk about with your friends on Monday, because you can be a puppeteer and do karaoke. What's better than that?
What's your go-to
karaoke song? Backstreet Boys, I want it that way.
That's very good. One of mine is Muskrat Love by Captain and Tennille. True story.
Okay. My full name is Jeremiah, so you can guess.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
And the song is factual, as I have mighty fine wine.
What else do you have?
All right. So if you're a bit of a nerd like me, on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so if you need a little time to recover from the puppet karaoke, you're going to be okay, is Public Archaeology Day at Wayne State's Old Main. Now, once a year, they pull out a bunch of rare artifacts you don't normally see related to Detroit and Great Lakes history, shipwrecks, all of that. They've got kid-friendly tables, hands-on activities, experts if you want to nerd out. Old Main is super cool in Detroit's Midtown. It's actually Detroit's old Central High School, built in 1895. Really cool building if you haven't seen it. I mean, if you've been to Wayne State before, you know the building. But it's a very cool event, something you're going to want to check out for everyone in the family.
And then a great idea for kids, too.
Oh, yeah. And I just love, you know, whether or not they're into history or not, it's just good to get the brain going, right? It's so important for people to try different stuff and see what they're into, you know?
Running out of time, Jared. Do the last one.
Real quick. Winter at Vallade Park on the Detroit Riverfront. It starts this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Free sleds to use, big bonfires, marshmallows, curling, board games, food. The whole thing starts this weekend, runs through March. But it's opening weekend. You're going to want to check it out. The Detroit Riverfront is awesome.
That'll be great. Great for the kids, too. Awesome.
I'm writing it down. That's a good kid activity. Thank you, Jer.
Absolutely. Have a great one.
And it's he has the Daily Detroit podcast, which he has all kind of tips.
Always something going on. Great stuff for families and for us adults as well. All right, that's going to do it for us. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Kevin Dietz and All Talk coming your way next here on WJR.